Hello, everybody. I'm George from Ireland, and I'm always one day late, slightly late. So Wolf Tone's birthday yesterday, 20th of June. Tybald Wolf Tone, as they say, pronounced it. So he's best known as being leader of the abortive 1798 uprising in Ireland, one of the United Irishmen. So, and then people who gather on the nearest Sunday to his birthday at Bodenstown Graveyard, near Salins, County Kildare, where he was laid to rest. So had Wolf Tone succeeded, Irish history would have turned out very differently. So he's born in a well-off middle-class family in Dublin. His father's a coachmaker. Obviously, remember, coaches were vital before the railways. You know, if you wanted to travel fast anywhere, you needed to have a coach. So, yeah, he was of English and French immigrant ancestry. His family come to Ireland about 150 years before his birth, well, on his father's side, Wolf Tone. And he was related to that Lord Kilwarden, ironically, one who was murdered under Robert Emmet's rising in 1803. Another thing is, this Wolf Tone, he's of uncertain paternity, and he was related to that Wolf of Quebec, the Irishman who took, you know, Canada from the French some years before Wolf Tone was born, just before Wolf Tone was born, so in 1763. So he's baptized in the Church of Ireland, as in the Protestant minority. His mother was a Catholic. But then he was obviously very aware of a lot of his Catholic cousins, and there was legal discrimination due to an act to prevent the further growth of popery. So this is an act passed by the Irish Parliament. Obviously, our Parliament was exclusively Protestant. Only the propertied classes were allowed to vote, a small minority of men. You can forget women voting. And that appeared to be a blind spot in Wolf Tone, because he didn't even seem to consider gender equality. He was a man of the 18th century. So anyway, he was quick at his books. He thrived at Trinity College Dublin, our only university at the time, being known for his oratory in the College Debating Society, was of the Whig Party. And the Whig Party were those who wanted sort of a measure of reform within Ireland. And to begin with, it was conventional. You know, as for splitting from Great Britain completely, he didn't seem to have considered that. And obviously in his childhood, that was hardly ever talked about. So, but his world was really the Anglophone East Coast of Ireland. Yeah, didn't travel very much to the West, and he did not speak Irish. Now, he was certainly a man of ideas, and he had ideas of establishing a colony in the Sandwich Islands, but that came to nothing, and which would generally be just been found by Captain Cook. That's around Hawaii. And the Prime Minister, Pitt the Younger, didn't even reply to that one. He thought of joining the East India Company. And of course, Irishmen could join it, although it was a thing really for Great Britain. Because remember, we weren't part of the United Kingdom at the time. And so that was it. So he'd been called to the bar, but he practiced desultorily. He was fascinated by politics, watching things from the gallery in the House of Commons. That's where he met Thomas Russell, the so-called man from God knows where, who had been in the East India Company. And that was a way you could get rich quick. It was obviously very dangerous, partly tropical diseases and so on. And they're beginning to think, well, should we have any of this political connection with Great Britain? Should we, you know, legislative independence had just come around. The thing that was going on in his adolescence was the American Revolution, is influenced by that. And then came the French Revolution. So I think he thought that things aren't necessarily so, that things can change quickly and drastically. And beginning to think that the, you know, legal discrimination against the Catholic majority was a terrible thing. And seeing that there was horrific penury in Ireland, as in all countries. And a lot of this was man-made. Much of this was avoidable. It could at least be mitigated. People finding the Irish volunteers to get that independence, that constitution 1782. So this armed group to defend Ireland in case, obviously, France invaded. Remember, France was the enemy of Great Britain and therefore of Ireland at the time of the American Revolution. Because remember, there was really no restrictions, certainly on Protestants owning firearms. And he realized that some Protestants, those outside the Church of Ireland, Presbyterians, Methodists, Baptists and so forth, they were discriminated against by law, and that wasn't right. And that in as much as there was elections, this was largely farcical because, of course, landlords could order people to vote this way, that way, on pain of being kicked out of their houses, evicted. So that's when he wrote an argument on behalf of the Catholics of Ireland and so on. But so there was still quite a lot of sectarianism, but he was becoming to be anti-sectarian. But there were other Catholics, so other Protestants said, you know, Catholics, they're anti-parliamentarian, they have absolute monarchies, they hate us like poison, they'll wipe us out. Let's not forget the massacres of the 1640s and so on. We won't have parliamentary government, we mustn't have mob rule, They are, mobile vulgus and so forth. And they're just like slavishly obedient to the Pope. So these were some of the arguments against. We don't want to be a priest-ridden race. Popery is tyranny. And some of it was straightforward bigotry, and some of it had an element of rationality to it. Then the wars, the Napoleon Wars against, broke out against France, and then France very quickly fell out with a Catholic Church and Catholicism. Christianity in general was even briefly banned when they had their own religion. Okay, but the Pope, the Napoleon come in and kissed to make up with the Pope, with Pius the Sixth. News traveled slowly, but the Catholic Church in Ireland got the idea the French Revolution was anti-Catholic, and there was obviously an element of truth in that. Okay, so he joined the Society of United Irishmen. He'd been part of the Catholic Committee, an organization which is not just for Catholics, that all sorts to repeal the civil disabilities placed on the Catholic majority in Ireland, eventually going to France and saying that foreign help was needed and really break the connection with England, that involvement in Great Britain was a very bad thing, that a lot of the poverty in Ireland was caused by Great Britain, saying we had all these mines full of useful metals. We actually don't have a lot of metals. We've got almost no coal was a big problem. It's less fertile and so on. And really scapegoating Great Britain. Now, there is some validity in some of these criticisms. Would have been better if we had equality? Yes, that would definitely be a good thing. Maybe a little bit unrealistic. Anyway, going to France and getting their military aid, but obviously had the French succeeded, they would have just turned Ireland into really a satellite of France. And obviously Napoleon eventually put his sisters and brothers on the various thrones. Now, okay, Napoleon didn't actually seize power to 1799, but France did this generally. France had expanded and annexed parts of Italy and so forth, and really made Switzerland their satrapy, done so to parts of Germany. That 1796 attempted invasion under Hoche didn't manage to land because of the terrible storms. He got so close to Bantry Bay, he said he could have spit onto the land. It was a lucky escape England had since the Armada. So, but he wasn't actually planning to invade England. But there were some Englishmen who agreed with him. The United Englishmen were found, the United Scotsmen and so forth, who wanted to revolutionize those countries. And I can't remember what is that place in Beira where they were just off. So he'd been in the French army for a while and finally come back to Ireland in the summer of 1798. Now, Napoleon was considering Ireland or Egypt, went to Egypt, fatal mistake. Egypt to disrupt British communications with India. There was no Suez Canal back then. It has nothing to do with India. They went via South Africa, stopping off at Cape Town. Had Napoleon come to Ireland with all that force, he likely would have won. And history might have been very different. We might have been separated from Great Britain and path we're on a different trajectory. Ireland in 1798, just like in 1690, was probably the fulcrum of Europe and therefore the world. For the once, the eyes of the world were on Ireland. Anyway, so the revolution went off prematurely, sort of end of May into early June before the French army had landed. Some success was defeated. Almost two separate rebellions, one in Wexford largely and one in Ulster. And then Tone's men, they didn't manage to land. Obviously, the French came there in 1798, that August, fighting the Castlebar races, eventually defeated and so on. So a lot of people, a lot of Irishmen were then executed upon surrender on the basis they committed treason against the King of Ireland, George III. But, there were no sophisticated methods to surveil people in a counterinsurgency, no CCTV, there were no fingerprints, any of that, no listening devices. So often people were tortured, they were half hanged. It was horrific. There's a lot of brutality on both sides, massacring civilians. Wolf Tone was arrested when his French warship was taken at a naval battle, Tory Island. And then he was arrested. He posed as a French officer, which he said he was, but he was recognized by someone who knew him from Dublin, Sir George Hill. Okay, and then he's put on trial for high treason. And so that's it. He was sentenced to be hanged, drawn, and quartered. Managed to cut his own throat in prison and die. He wanted to be shot, not to be hanged as a felon. But his book was given back. Okay. So he's an egalitarian, most respectable class of men, the men of no property. So Wolf Tone is an icon for some people, and some GAA clubs are named in his honor. That is Theobald Wolf Tone. And his children lived on in France, who joined the French army. So it was a very significant figure, the 35 years he lived. And then he was an incredibly articulate, convincing, charismatic, ebullient figure. and some people idolize him to this day. So that is Theobald Wolfe Tone. Would it be better had he succeeded? And it's just difficult to argue that it wouldn't. If we could have had equality, I mean, I'm very happy to be connected to Great Britain, but actually it completely backfired. He massively exacerbated sectarianism, and he caused Ireland to be absorbed into the United Kingdom, the precise opposite of everything he wanted. But if we could have had equality, obviously that would have been a step forward. And that meant breaking the connection with Great Britain, maybe. You might say there was no peaceful way to achieve these methods, as there was no democracy or anything even remotely approaching it. Okay, peaceful protests, signing petitions, strikes and so on, but maybe not effectual. Well, thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate PayPal, George Carlin 790@gmail.com. Goodbye.